little bit, since you had successfully interested von Braun in this design, what was he like to work with, and how often did you actually have an opportunity on this program to work with him?
I didn't have much opportunity on this program. He was in charge of the Huntsman at the time.
Sure.
So was in charge of the rover development.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we were subcontractors. After he got the contract, we were subcontractors to Boeing. So you don't, as a subcontractor, you don't go to your prime contractor's customer. You don't do that. But we made presentations to him later on. But I didn't have any direct discussions with him. That was not my job, okay?
Okay, yes. All right.
He was not that involved, except what he did was make a decision to go with the rover.
I see.
NASA decided we're not going with the rover. We don't have any room. We don't have any weight. And we can't have a dual launch system. We have a single launch system.
Mm-hmm.
And very fluently, one of the guys said, if you can get a rover in that single launcher, you know, we'll do a thing about it. I said, God damn it, I'm going to do that. So I went to Washington and talked to the Army guys who were in charge. Well, these guys were assigned to NASA, these Army guys.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Tom, I forgot his name.
Well, I am aware of Sam Phillips, who is head of the Apollo program.
Sam was in charge of the Apollo.
Right.
This was the guy underneath him.
I see. Okay.
I went to him and I said, hey, look, we want to build a vehicle. Tell me what kind of space and weight you have available.
Mm-hmm.
He showed us that compartment, that instrument compartment. And boy, that's pretty sporty. So we went back and we turned off Ernst Pavlik's configured vehicle.
That's
4 or 5 months of time we had it done.
That's great. That's going
to
be...
He went to see Rob Brown. He says, we will do this. That was such a tremendous... You don't know how my heart jumped when he said that.
That was the moment you were living for, yeah.
Yes. Well, I'd worked on it for... At that time, I worked on it for probably up to 6 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm. I know all through the 60s, NASA had hired, had pulled contracts to have companies work on these various vehicle designs, and,
right.
And you'll read about that. But that served all as the groundwork necessary to get the LRV for GM Boeing going.
Yeah, well, they even had a jumping machine where they would bounce along. Is that part of your...
Well, yes, because the testing of this qualifying the rover for flight was very important. I've got a number of the test fixtures, the thermal vacuum testing that was done in Huntsville and up at Kent, Washington. But Ron tells me there was also a number of test fixtures at GM there in Santa Barbara for these.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, at the carousel, we told you about that.
Yes.
Then we built the training vehicle from scratch. That was a real great... that was tough, so we had to make the same configuration to make it be able to handle a full-grown... two men with spacesuits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, what we did was we made 2 ply-wire wheels.
Oh, okay.
We put one wheel inside the other.
Okay.
And then the wire is a little thicker.
I see.
So you got the... gauge, but, I go back in my book to find out, but I don't have it in my...
Okay. All right.
The suspension had to be slightly different. Same configuration, but beefier.
Yes, in fact, and it had actual disc brakes, too, didn't it? The ones
you... No, it had regular brakes.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
It didn't have disc brakes.
Okay.
Same thing.
Okay. Because I will be...
They put regular rubber tires on it. It really infuriated us.
Yeah.
They felt these new ply tires, but they were afraid of breaking them, so when they were doing running around and not significant tests, they put their rubber tires on.
Well, that's almost all the pictures of the 1G trainer show it with the tires on there. Occasionally, you'll see it with the heavy duty wire mesh wheels.
Looking at I got a picture out of my desk here with me, Dr. Becker, and Ferenc Pavlik on the 1G trainer with the dual mesh wheel tires on it.
Oh.
I can send you one of those.
Could you please?
As a matter of fact, I can send you email it to you.
Oh, okay, because you've got, okay.
Yeah, send my email, yes.
Well, let me give you another email address that may work, because I use my mail.com email for just text messages.
Yeah.
But if I get attachments for Word documents or JPEG files, I have another email address that hopefully will work.
Okay. Give me that.
Okay, I'll spell it out for you. AHYOUNG 50.
What's that?
AHYOUNG 50.
50.
1965, that's the year I was born.
At
yahoo.com. They have a much bigger file availability, so if you send a big file, it should go through, you know.
Yes, okay, yeah. I'll do that. I'll send, as a matter of fact, I'll send you my whole array of, I think I've got about 15 pictures that I use when I give briefings on this thing.
Okay. If for some reason it gets bounced, we'll find some other way to get the photos.
Oh, you know, it's not that complicated. You know, and I also have the carousel.
Oh, that would be terrific, sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's beautiful. And the carousel, yeah, that's very nice. You'll enjoy that.
Okay. Well, I've come across a great many documents that deal with various aspects, the Waterways Experiment Station. Oh, it is, really?
Those guys don't do it to it.
They didn't?
No. They got a lot of press, though, you know.
It sure sounds like they know what they were doing.
Well, they're okay, but they had nothing to do with the development of that thing. They tried to test it, and they really, it was well after the fact, and the damn vehicle was on the moon when they were doing it. The report was done by some Greek guy, what the hell was it? Who was trying to climb on the bandwagon for oh. Get it on the rover.
Oh, I see.
No, it was Nick somebody.
Okay.
You'll see it on the cover. I have that report in my report.
Oh, Nick Costas.
Nick Costas.
Yes.
Nice guy, but he's trying to climb on our show and get some publicity on the rover. He did nothing.
Oh, my.
Let me stop. He did nothing on the development of that. He was trying to evaluate it for the Army.
Well, yeah, that's true. What he wrote was actually an evaluation of Apollo 15 LRV results, basically.
Right. That's right. I know, Nick.
And, well, you know, I'm going to come across a lot of these situations where, I strive to be historically accurate with what I write. And sometimes what I have written based on material I found may conflict with someone else's first-person account of what really happened. But, you know, that's why I get rough drafts out to see how accurate I am and what needs to be changed. So
I'm... Johnny Marino was on top of this thing once the RFP was established.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, Sonny was not involved. Not officially involved. He may have been involved because of, he liked it or he was interested. But he became involved when the RFP was put out.
Yes, yes.
Very good man. I mean, a very honest guy and a very good guy to get information from.
Okay, yeah, he was a very good interview. And
yeah.
He'll be looking at this thing, too. So there were actually, let me understand what GM actually built that they shipped to Boeing, because then Boeing would assemble the whole vehicle and do tests there, is that correct?
Yeah.
That's correct, right?
They assembled the whole vehicle, yes.
Okay, so GM in Santa Barbara built the subsystems like the suspension, the drive, and so forth, is that right?
No, we delivered to them something we call the M over 4. That was a mobility system over 4. They were 1/4 of the entire mobility system. There were the 4 of them to make a vehicle, right?
Yes.
So we delivered that had 4 M over 4s per vehicle.
Oh, I see. Okay.
M over 4 means everything that from the attachment to the chassis on out to the wheel was armed. That was called an M over 4.
Okay. All right. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Even the suspension parts, all Boeing provided was the attach points for the suspension.
I see. Okay. I gotcha. All right.
We M over 4. We delivered four times 4, and we did 16 of those.
Yes, yes.
One of the Smithsonian, you know, the fourth rover's in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, there's quite a story. They tend to get their hands on anything NASA-related as soon as possible.
That was a flight vehicle, by the way.
Yes.
And there's some other models in Huntsville, and maybe Cape Kennedy, and maybe East Houston. Those are not... Parts of the test article, the qualification article, that was put together to make a vehicle.
I see. Okay.
3 vehicles on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Smithsonian. We built 4 flight units, flight qualified units, and that's where they are now.
Yes. And, well, let me give you real quickly a brief outline of the whole book. Chapter 1 is on engineering the LRV. Chapter 2 is on training.
Hold on a second, Anthony.
Yes.
Hello.
That's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Not a problem. Do you
have? No, no, they're gone.
Okay. That's chapter one. Chapter two is on training, on astronaut training, which will include the design and building of the 1G training vehicle.
Yeah.
As well as. Yeah, as well as the Grover that was, I guess, built by the U.S. Geologic Survey. It was something that they just used out in Arizona.
No? I built that.
Oh, is that right?
Lunar Mission Development Vehicle.
Oh, is that what it was called?
Lunar Mission, and right now that's in Huntsville.
Oh, okay.
And they got the wrong name on it. They got it. Boeing built it. I built that here in Santa Barbara.
Oh, all right, because you
see... Mission Development Vehicle.
Because you see the astronauts training on this thing. Yes, he was. Hmm?
I built that for him.
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sure he has. I would really like to get an interview with him.
Hold on.
Okay. Okay, well, this was not. The thing I'm talking about was actually no bigger than a lunar rover.
What was it called?
It was nicknamed Grover for a geological test rover or something, and Grover was an acronym.
Was that a poster?
Is it on a house phone or is it on the...
Cell phone.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, you know, you can jump off anytime that you find...
I have two lines. Let me call her on this other line, okay?
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
I can't do that. Let me put you on hold.
Okay.
Let me try her cell phone, okay? Hang on and go through. She doesn't mind.
Certainly. Go right ahead. Okay. You already told me your...
Yes, I have a book on the Grover. That was not part of our program.
Right.
That was a Waterways Experiment Station trying to get in on the act.
I see.
The Grover, yes, I have that book.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You've already told me your heart-stopping moment when the front steering didn't work initially on Apollo 15.
Right.
What was the most gratifying moment? I guess it was sometime during Apollo 15 when it was going well. What was... give me a highlight that you were most proud of.
When they deployed that and they pulled it out, and it kept popping up and popping up, like, my God, it works!
Yeah.
I really felt very relieved when they popped it out and they landed it and you got in and started driving with it.
Yes.
But a lot of things had to come together. The translunar flight had to be successful. And that went through a lot of temperature changes.
Exactly.
Vacuum changes and, you know, things can happen.
There was no means of monitoring the rover at all until you got it on the surface.
That's right, until we pulled that landing and put it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very good, yeah.
Okay, well, good.
I have a picture of the moon, and I got the three spots where the rovers are located. When I end my talks, I talk about, if you look up at the moon, and you look at, and I describe where they are, and you had a telescope, you could see.
You know what's really fascinating about that, Sam? Those vehicles are going to last for eternity.
Yes.
They're not going to be like any other car that rusts away in the elements or something.
Right.
If they don't ever move them, if they leave them in situ, as they call it,
yes.
they'll last forever, really.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, yes. And my team surgeon says, is that, I'm sure that when if I went up there again in the future, and for the battery,
yeah,
battery in and just start it up and go, well, I'm not sure of that, but good story.
Well, let's fast forward a little bit here, because I'd like to find out, the last chapter, see, besides the training chapter, then I have three chapters, one each on Apollo 15, 16, and 17.
Yes.
Then the chapter following that is going to be on the Martian rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. And
which
the
one?
Spirit and Opportunity, the Martian rovers.
Yeah. See, Frank Pavlik was a consultant at JPL for those.
Oh, is that right? That doesn't...
Yes, so you talk to him, you get more detail about it.
Okay, well, that doesn't surprise me at all. Because what I'm interested in finding out is when NASA is, of course, pushing this new vision for space exploration. They're working on the crew exploration vehicle.
Right.
And if they go back to the moon, they're going to have a rover, obviously.
Oh, yes.
So what I'm going to explore in this last chapter is what configuration that new rover might take, and will NASA at all consult the original engineers and managers who worked on the original rover for the new one? It's sort of a theoretical question, but I don't know if that's good. What configuration do you think future rovers are going to take? Will they be much different?
It should be unlike what we put up there already, maybe bigger.
Yeah.
But I think, there's nothing like wheels to do things. I mean, you see, the guys for Mars, they had accumulated six-wheel vehicles. Well,
yes, they did.
Good, it worked fine. But we know what the moon is like. The moon doesn't have anything that you need a complicated mechanism like that for.
Yes.
Those Rolls Royce on Mars, they're doing a great job. It's totally unknown. We didn't know just what kind of craters or what kind of things you'd run into. So they configured that. As a matter of fact, one of the guys who worked on the concept of the Mars rover, his father was the director of the laboratory in Santa Barbara when we set it up in 1961.
Wow. Okay.
Dr. Howard Wilcox. He was a scientist from the Naval Ordnance Station in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was a kid, he was 7, 8, 9, or 10 years old, we had him over at our lab. And in the back of our plant, we had something called a lunarium. You ever hear of that?
No, I have not.
It was about an acre or so that we configured with craters and rocks and boulders, and we actually built models of not the LRV, but this is a Surveyor Lunar Rover.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Okay, the SLRV.
Yes, that's right.
The SLRV was sent to the moon and remotely controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So we built this lunarium. We built this Surveyor Rover, which was something like just a couple of hundred pounds total. Maybe 100 pounds, and it was maybe 6 feet long, and it had six wheels.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then we had a television station in the lab, and we would send it over out there, and we would have somebody actually operate it. And, you know, there's a time delay between what you see and your action that you take.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
That was the whole idea of why we did this. And this kid, who was on the Mars rover, he came down to the lab, he was infatuated. We had to play around with driving the Surveyor over our lunarium. And I guess that tickled his fancy. He got a job at JPL, and my God, he was involved with the design of the Mars rover.
Well, I just got a book by Steve Squires on, it's called Roving Mars. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, I don't know if that's the guy or not, because...
No, his name was Wilcox.
Oh, Wilcox. Okay.
Frank Wilcox.
Okay.
He was a guy he was in charge. I don't know if he was in charge of mobility for the Mars rover, but he was there.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think, Sam, I've really hit all the points I wanted to. Is there anything that you haven't covered that you would like to discuss regarding the rover that you want to include?
Let's see. I know I'm going to come up with something, but I'll just grab you.
Okay, that's fine. That's great.
And I'll send you the pictures that I promised to send you.
Okay. I'll when you email me, I'll go ahead and email you my mailing address if there's anything of a hard copy nature that you want to send me, and I'll just return it after I copy it or make what notes I need to from that.
You have all the information on the Grover and the waterways, you have those reports?
I have the waterways, but I don't have much information at all on Grover.
Yeah. I'll stick to my file.
Okay. That's a bit of a... And there were a couple of vehicles that they used in the Arizona desert. One of them shows like these big tractor wheels on it. There's a picture of John Young standing next to that, and I have no idea what that thing is.
Well, I think the New York Times had a nice article on that back in the 60s.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see. Do you have my email address?
No, let me write that down.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a car buff. I have a 1954 MTTF. You know what that is?
Yes, I do.
So my email is samsmg.
All right.
S-A-M-S-M-G.
Okay.
@AOL.com.
@AOL.com. That's very easy to remember.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Terrific, Sam. Thanks so much for your help today. You've really been...
It's a very favorite subject of mine, as you probably
know. Sure. And I'm going to be... the final manuscript will be delivered sometime in March, so I've got some months, but I've got a lot of work to do.
Yes.
Still.
Well, I'm going to do these. If you keep feeding me some things, then I can send you maybe appropriate... graphics or photographs to accentuate that.
Okay. All right.
Pieces or something.
Okay, good. Well, thanks again. I'm glad I got you at home today and you were able to give me some time.
Wait, you live in Florida?
Yeah, I'm in Miami, actually.
You're a native of Florida?
No, I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. I went to college in Brooklyn. I went to Pratt Institute.
Yeah. Oh, great, really?
Yeah, I got my bachelor's degree in industrial design from there.
Oh, really?
And I lived up in Connecticut for about 6 years working for various design offices and then moved to Florida in 81.
Yeah.
And been design engineering ever since. I worked for Motorola, Harris Corporation, Lockheed, a bunch of companies.
Electronics or what?
Mostly electromechanical components and design.
Mechanical engineering? Oh, your design?
Yes, that's right.
I almost went to Pratt, but I got out after World War II. I was looking for a college, and I signed up for Pratt University of Miami in Coral Gables.
Yes.
And Newark College of Engineering.
Oh, I see.
And I took my degree in Newark College of Engineering.
I see, okay.
Hey, Danny, nice talking to you.
Great. You've been a wonderful interview, and I'm looking forward to working with you on just fine-tuning this thing so it's as good as it can be.
I am too. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.